Hello, everyone, and welcome to TAG TechStart Live. I'm Larry Williams, President and CEO of TAG, and I'm pleased to bring you another edition of this podcast featuring our technology community's best and brightest leaders. This podcast is all about showcasing what makes Georgia the number one place to do business, and it's about bringing to you the stories of how our technology community and our remarkable TAG members are driving innovation, benefiting our local technology community, and making a global impact. Today, I'm joined by Jim Bonet, Vice President of Innovation and Entrepreneurship at the Savannah Economic Development Authority, SEDA. Jim was hired in 2018 and is responsible for developing and implementing a marketing and business development action plan that attracts creative production, design, and technology prospects to Savannah for successful location and operation. Jim, you were previously with the Georgia Institute of Technology as the general manager of ATDC, the Advanced Technology of Development Center. We had an opportunity to work closely together, and you also were the founder of Startup Checks. And you also have a background in entrepreneurism, and you were also the CEO at Nexpense, which was a successful exit, which was acquired in 2012. So, Jim, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here today, even though I'm at home.
That's right. Well, Jim, why don't you just start off telling us a little bit about your background and your role over at SEDA.
Sure. So I often describe myself as a recovering entrepreneur instead of a current entrepreneur, although I have to say I feel deep in my soul that I'm an entrepreneur. I've felt like the last couple of years I haven't been doing an entrepreneurship role, but instead helping other entrepreneurs. And that really started kind of 2008 when I launched Startup Chicks and was doing Nexpense. And after selling Nexpense in 2012, joined ATDC first as a entrepreneur in residence, eventually as assistant general manager and then general manager. I really got back into the idea about how I could have a bigger impact by helping entrepreneurs on their journey. And that's kind of what's led me here to SEDA even. My family's lived in this region for 20 some years, and I've always wondered why Savannah didn't have a stronger technology ecosystem. Why was Savannah not more of a startup town than it is today? It seems to me that it has all the assets to be tremendously successful in this intersection of where the digital native creatives that graduate from SCAD meet with the larger companies like the Gulfstreams and Great Danes and JCBs that are located here. And we could do some really interesting things. So when I was offered the position to come down here, I decided to kind of, walk the talk that I've been saying. For when I was general manager of ATDC, we ran a statewide program. We had educational programs going in 11 cities across the state. And I was going out and talking to people saying that we could do this anywhere. You could cultivate a startup technology-centered community anywhere, an innovation economy in every small town in Georgia. So I decided to move to Savannah and test to see if I could actually make that happen.
Well, that's great. To be an entrepreneur and to really thrive in that culture, and I like the way you said it, you like to help people through their journey. But talk to us about what makes a person an entrepreneur. What is that drive that comes up, that motivation that drives someone who really wants to take that journey from startup all the way up to scaling a company?
Craziness? No. a little bit of a bolt loose up there, but no. I think for myself and most of the entrepreneurs that I work with, there's this ultimate kind of one of your own personal values is to have an impact, right? To find a way to have a bigger impact on the world than you may have any other way. And that's by building an organization and a culture that drives change and hopefully makes the world a better place through the company that you create and the products that your company creates to serve the needs of your customer. So ultimately, I think for me, it's always been about how can I have an impact? How can you know, I get up every day and do something that's going to touch the lives of other people and make their lives better. And I've always thought that, whether I was, you know, back in the day as a coder at, you know, TSW International, which became Indus International, right? We wrote asset management software. Well, you know, one day I was sitting there with a purchasing clerk, and my job ultimately was to design a system that meant that their lives was better, that they had, you know, their jobs were easier because the software worked better and the systems flowed better. And that's kind of how I got into this, is, you know, how can I have an impact? How can something that we create change people's lives for the better?
You know, you mentioned an important part of it, and it's really about building that team. And so I think for an entrepreneur, it's really about having a culture of innovation. And I'd love to hear your perspective about how do you go about, you know, building the team from the startup, sharing that vision and getting that culture of innovation built to drive that vision.
Yeah, so that is part of the most challenging and most fun thing about being an entrepreneur, is the ability to create a company and create a culture and bring, you know, get the right people on the bus, so to speak. And really, when I think about building a team, I think about leading versus managing. It's kind of the way I think about things. I always wanted a team of disruptors. I wanted everyone on the team to be able to, like, disrupt our industry in their own way. And so, like, as a chief technology officer for a software company, my goal was to try and find really, really smart people, people that were much smarter than I was, and then give them the opportunity, say, okay, here's the problem, how do we solve it? And let them come up with a way to solve it instead of trying to give them the way to solve it. And even as general manager of ATDC, I mean, we grew the team from when I first started, there was about 5 people, I think 3 people full-time and the rest of us were part-time, and then all the way up to 26 people when I left. The current general manager of ATDC told me I hired unmanageable people in our first conversation after he took the job. And my job there was to serve entrepreneurs. And I think entrepreneurs best serve entrepreneurs, right? Because there's a mindset there. So I hired really strong entrepreneurs, and they don't like to be managed. And I gave them a vision. You know, we launched the FinTech program while I was at ATDC. And I hired Michelangelo Ho to run it. And I said, you're the FinTech person. Tell me how to do it. How do we become a startup community that really thrives on FinTech? Go, figure it out. Get back to me. Right. And that, you know, is about hiring other leaders, I guess, and letting them do their thing. And trying to hire people that are smarter, better than you. And again, let them do their thing. Don't get in their way. And part of that's also knowing that not everything's going to work, right? There's going to be failure. People are going to make mistakes, and just dealing with it as fast as you can and course correcting as fast as you can.
How do you set up that framework? As you said, set the vision, set the framework. So there's a lot of whiteboard for people to be, you know, the free thinking, creative people that you want to. But at the same time, you want them lined up to mission and vision. How do you balance those?
Yeah, I think part of the hardest thing is getting the roles right, right? When you're thinking about hiring for a position, what is that role? How do you define what that role is? What does success look like for that role before you even hire the person, such that hopefully you can get the right person in the seat and they can be excited about the role? You know, I've done the other way where I found the person and then created the role. And I'd say it's a little bit harder because now you found a person, you're trying to define a role around what they're really good at. So I'd say I prefer to, like, try and document what I want the organization to look like and come up with the next, you know, 2 to 3 hires that we have to make in order to be successful, document their roles pretty clear, and then go out and find somebody that fits that role versus the other way. But I think it's communication. It's, you know, having a clear definition of what their role is and what the metrics that we're going to define that success is. And especially now when you're not face-to-face every day, you know, having those metrics and knowing what success looks like for this quarter, for this year, was really important.
Yeah, it is. And that is quite the challenge, I think, in any organization, of that balance and then making sure that we're moving everything in the right direction. Something that you and I have talked a lot about over the years, and I always love hearing your perspective and the evolution of your perspective, because it is an evolving topic. And that is, you know, innovation, entrepreneurism throughout the state of Georgia. We know we've got this global hub of innovation called Atlanta in that region that it represents, but there are really very interesting things going on throughout the state. So can you talk, so as we face this opportunity and challenge, give us your statewide perspective, and then a little bit later in the conversation, we're going to drill down on Savannah. But what is your perspective there about what that innovation culture looks like throughout and the opportunities that we have throughout the state?
Sure. So I've been lucky enough to be thinking about this for a long time now, right? Okay. So I've been with ATDC since 2011 and focused on the statewide program there. Even early on, it was kind of my mastermind was ATDC at and running these our education programs at the different co-working spaces across the state, which got me connected to each city in the state, circa 2011, 2012. So I know the folks that are doing interesting things in Augusta at both the medical college there as well as the cyber center and, the clubhouse. And I know the folks in Macon at Spark Macon, and I know the folks down in Columbus at Columbus Makes It. And so I think of the state of Georgia as a network of nodes, where Atlanta happens to be the largest node. And how can we do a better job of connecting those nodes, right? And so I've been lucky enough to be on the Lieutenant Governor's Innovation Task Force. I'm on two of the subcommittees right now that's going on, and there'll be kind of some reports coming out probably around the July timeframe. And it's people from across the state that are interested in making Georgia globally recognized as the number one tech state on the East Coast. And part of my issue around this is, are we not already? Right? Yeah. Is the problem that we don't believe it, or is the problem that the world doesn't believe it? Right? And so I think there's a little bit of a storytelling element here that this state is missing. And I certainly feel it in Savannah. Like whenever I go and talk tech to people, they're like, well, we're not good at tech. And I'm like, well, but you know, DIRT, who makes those modular walls for build office buildings, you know, has been using AR, VR for 8 years to sell. Is that not innovative, right? Gulfstream has a titanium printer for parts for old planes that they no longer make those parts for. So they can print 3D print titanium parts for an airplane. Is that not innovative? Right? Yeah. Great Dane has a team of 15 data scientists here that are analyzing the data that's coming off the IoT devices that they've now put on their trucking containers. So data is coming from all over the country, and they're trying to make sense of that data. Is that not innovative? And people go, oh. So I think we have a storytelling issue, especially across the entire state, less so in Atlanta, about, you know, we have really innovative people. We have very innovative companies. We're a little bit siloed in that nature. So how do we get the story out? How do we build, again, how do we connect these nodes, these different cities that have different innovations going on, in different industry clusters, right, and leveraging different technology and get ourselves situated so that we are, as a state, globally recognized as not only, you know, the innovation leader for the East Coast, but, you know, top five innovation leader, period. So that's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, and I agree wholeheartedly. And I'm on the workforce development subcommittee of the Lieutenant Governor's Task Force as well, and it's very interesting. I firmly believe that Georgia is not only a top five state, but we're one of the global hubs of innovation, and that we do that. I think sometimes we suffer from our southern sensibilities. We tend to be understated, sort of the old adage of, you know, I'm just a southern lawyer, I'm about to eat your lunch, but I'm just a southern lawyer. And I think that translates. And I think also that it's part of it is in Georgia, it's where technology meets the real world. We don't always have the shiniest new gadget or, you know, not big in social apps, but we have more companies that are using technology to drive revenue than probably anywhere else. And so that makes a lot of our companies leaders. And you gave some great examples, brands that might not be synonymous with technology, but they're very innovative and they're utilizing technology to do things, and they're doing it all over the state. And it is interesting that I do think we have to believe ourselves, but that's the first step. But in a lot of ways, you know, we're there. And if we look at Metro Atlanta, in a lot of ways, you know, companies are flocking here. They want to be here. And so I think deploying that across the state is a great opportunity for us. Let's talk about it in the context of the world we're living in today, in the world of the pandemic and COVID-19. How do you think that's impacted things? And then what do you think the future is going to look like for entrepreneurs and startups throughout the state?
So my world dramatically changed on March 16th. I've spent pretty much the last 12 years ecosystem building, as we call it, startup ecosystem, innovation ecosystem building. And I always believe that that was a face-to-face activity. My days were meeting after meeting after meeting, sometimes in 30-minute intervals with entrepreneurs, lots of evening events, almost every night an evening event, tag society meetings, my startup chicks meetings, the ATDC meetings, even here. I've got an ATDC startup circle this evening. All of it's virtual now, and it's been amazing how easy that transition was for me. I'm a technologist, so I'm very comfortable with technology. My prior life as a chief technology officer. Making the decision to go virtual took me a few days because I was like, nah, this isn't real. How do you do this? But now that we're virtual, in some ways it's easier because I have a lot more flexibility as to where I can pull speakers from, right? So I'm lining up speakers for the month of June right now, and they don't have to be in Spana. They can be anywhere, right? So right. I can go after the best speaker possible on the topic instead of worrying about trying to get someone in Savannah that could talk to that topic. And so in some ways it's easier, and we're going to stay virtual for all events through at least June. I don't know what's going to happen after that. So I think we've gone from face-to-face to virtual, and now there's going to be this mixture. And I think it's going to work well. I think we're gonna figure out this happy meeting of things that we need to or want to do face to face. And there's gonna be the things that we can still do virtually. I do think we're gonna see a lot more remote work, right? Which is a huge opportunity for smaller cities like Savannah, where you're not required to be in the office every day. So why live in a place where you have an hour commute? Why not live, well, like where I live right now, I'm staring at, it's high tide, the marsh is in full. I see all the beautiful birds out my window right now. Why not live here and have a job in Atlanta where I go visit a couple of times a month? So I think we're going to see a lot more remote, and we've already seen Twitter and Square, both tech companies say that their workers never have to come back. Right. And we've seen, what was the one that was most interesting to me? Nationwide Insurance has closed down their four largest buildings saying work from home forever. They'll still have some offices, but an insurance company is not necessarily, you know, seen as a trend breaker. And here they're telling everyone to work from home. So I think we're going to see some transition or some trend. There are some jobs that are still best in person, though, and I don't know how to figure that out, right? You know, so a lot of these innovation jobs require, you know, being in that brainstorm session with the whiteboard. And I just spent the last quarter, doing a brainstorm on the future of logistics with 18 SCAD students, some folks from the port, some folks from Great Dane, and a couple other logistics companies, about what does logistics look like in the future. And there are whiteboarding tools for online, and we could use Zoom, we use Slack, but there are some things, it's just like, you know, gosh, I wish we could be in a room together to do this right now. So I think the more creative your job is, the more likely you're gonna have to be physically in some place for at least certain phases of the product life cycle. Mm-hmm. But then there's something also about stepping back and being remote and being able to be a little bit more focused as well. So I think we're going to see more remote. You know, I think we're going to see some people will have the ability to leave the cities, some of the bigger cities at least, and you know, move to a different kind of quieter lifestyle. You know, I feel really bad for the folks in San Francisco and New York and Chicago that live in a 600 square foot apartment and haven't been able to leave their house for the last 3 months. You know, and quite frankly, they're still on lockdown. So, and I think people are going to appreciate places where they can have a higher quality of life, and Georgia will hopefully benefit from that.
You know, it is interesting. You've mentioned, part of it, sort of tying this in a COVID-19 world, and if we get to a post, you know, is it a cohabitation in post COVID-19, or is it is there truly a post COVID-19, and when we get there? So, you know, that's going to affect our ability to build innovation cultures in person. And you touched on that. But what do you think it's going to do for like things like access to capital? Are the private equity sources still very active? How are they reacting to all of this during these times?
So I read PitchBook's newsletter every morning, and today I read that somebody is launching a brand new fund, their third fund, and they're raising $17.6 billion, and wow, okay, right now. So I think there's still an appetite. There's still people that are going to do that. I also read a different article that said a lot of people are probably going to move out of San Francisco, right? And it may be back that Sand Hill Road's more popular than downtown San Francisco from a VC perspective. We've already seen some VCs open offices in North Carolina, right, that were New York or West Coast funders. Hopefully we can do something to encourage more West Coast investors to open offices in Atlanta or the state of Georgia to get folks closer. I think how fast the economy recovers is really key, right? So I had received funding from the EDA, the federal government, to launch a seed fund here. It's called a seed fund starter grant from the EDA, SFS fund. And I received $300,000, $100,000 a year for 3 years. And I was supposed to start raising money for that in March. So I reached out to my contacts at the EDA and asked for an extension. And I basically just pushed everything back a year. I haven't taken any of their money yet. But I just don't feel confident. In March, I did not feel confident that I could go out and raise $2 million from local high net worth individuals to start a seed fund in the region while the stock market's so uncertain. The commercial real estate market's uncertain. everything's uncertain. So I decided, I reached out and said, I want to push it at least 6 months. I don't want to start till October at the earliest. And I just want to see where we're at in October. And they agreed. So, I am watching carefully and paying attention. I guess it depends on how long the recession lasts, if there really is a recession. Is it U-shape? Is it V-shape? Is it W-shape? I'm relatively confident with what we're seeing from an opening perspective in Georgia, right? We've been open since April 27th. It's too soon to say how bad we were at social distancing Memorial Day weekend. But, you know, Georgia's been pretty flat since we opened in April, the end of April. And so hopefully that means people are being smart. We can reboot the economy, get people moving again, and then, you know, see how we come out of this. And, you know, 2008, 2009, a lot of great startups started in 2008, 2009. So what great startups are going to start out of this?
It's a great point, and I've really been observing that people in Georgia have really been being smart about this reentry. People, I think there's some pent-up, you know, some cabin fever. People are ready to get out, but I think everybody has the same sentiment. They want to be safe and healthy, and they want our community to be safe and healthy. And I think that's always been part of Georgia, as we do have that community mindset. One thing that we've seen in other recessions is that, whenever there's a contraction, and especially when there's high unemployment, we see an uptick in the number of companies that start up. So one is out of necessity. People have to make a living, so they're, standing up their own companies. And then some of them are really thinking of new and innovative ways. Couple of things that I think of, and this will, because I'll talk to you about supply chain, is there are a couple of things like in government, where one of the government CIOs have told me that they were able to do, and he was able to accelerate his digital transformation agenda in 30 days, things he'd been trying to get done in 2 years. Telemedicine and how that affects health IT. A lot of relaxation of policies and other things that inhibited the growth of telemedicine all of a sudden got pushed aside. And personally, I don't see it going back. We've seen both the resilience and in some cases, the some of the, flaws in our supply chain. So one end is very resilient, able to, it's been working very well. But then we've seen some areas where it could be better. So talk to us about this, talk to us about general opportunities that this can present. You touched on it with the innovation and the opportunities for innovation. And then let's follow up with what's going on in supply chain down in Savannah.
Yeah, so I mean, we've been fairly lucky. I mean, I work with a large number of startups here in Savannah, and most of them have been okay. And it's because they tend to be in one or two areas. Strangely enough, we have a lot of folks in healthcare technology, right? So we have Corestrada, who's a telemedicine company that's, focused on wound care. I've got Candor USA, which is a healthcare marketplace company, brokers, software for brokers. We've got CTG Covenant Technology Group, which is physician credentialing, which was able to actually help the hospitals adapt to new credentialing requirements when this all started. So when the state law started to ease up on some of the credentialing requirements for the physicians and the nurses. So we've had some companies that are just tremendously growing in the healthcare space. But of course, we also have a tremendous amount of e-commerce and logistics related stuff going on down here because of the port. So the Port of Savannah is, number three port in the nation by volume as of this year. It is ranked as probably the most innovative port on the Western Hemisphere. Rotterdam is the only one that's considered to be more innovative than the Port of Savannah. And so while their activity has been down over March and April, it's only been down about 20%. So all the logistics companies that support the port, both the port itself and then all the warehouses and supply chain companies, logistics companies, 3PLs that are around here have actually, been on fire the whole time, right? So they're struggling to hire enough people. They're struggling to make sure that they keep their workforce safe. There was a lot of talk early on that the virus would spike just as the volume out of China grew and we would be having a real issue with workforce. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, that did not happen, right? So we were all watching, thinking that there was going to be this line of ships waiting to get into the port and no workers because they were all sick. Yeah. That did not happen, knock on wood, this time, this go around. So I think, when you think about my strategy for the state is that each region of the state should really go all in on whatever they're best at, right? Starting great startups requires a lot of deep business knowledge around the industry in which you want to innovate. And so if Savannah is going to be globally recognized within the state of Georgia, beyond the state of Georgia, for any type of innovation, the place that is around logistics, the logistics innovation. So, I've been working on it since I got here. It actually was, Savannah was named a logistics technology corridor right before I got here, May of 2018, by the state, signed by the governor. And I've been working about, okay, how do we make that more than just a blue sign on the highway, right? you're now entering the Savannah Logistics Technology Corridor. What does that mean? And so myself and a group of individuals that formed a task force that's now actually being led by Georgia Southern University and CETA is looking at what do we need to activate innovation and logistics technology? What do we need to activate more technology workers that want to specialize in this type of supply chain to move to the region to innovate here, both as individuals and as companies? And then how do we tell that story? And then I guess there's another component. There is the education component, right? And how do you think about not the jobs that are today in these warehouses and or the port, but the jobs that we're going to be thinking about in 5 or 10 years. This one of the stories I like to point out to people that start to say, well, we can't do that. We're not good at technology. We're a Savannah. You say, okay, well, the number one paying job in a warehouse today is a forklift driver. They make $18 an hour. And that's the best job in some of these warehouses, right? And, you know, the Wayfair establishment, the Wayfair warehouse here is supposed to employ 1,000 people over the next 2 years, right? Imagine a warehouse without any forklift drivers, because Amazon doesn't have very many forklift drivers. Most of their forklifts drive themselves. So if we're not working with the technical colleges and the university system of Georgia to figure out what the jobs are going to be 5 or 10 years from now, we can't get people trained for what will be the high paying jobs in the warehouses at that point in time, in the logistics industry at that point in time. So there's a whole lot of work going towards what is the academy or Logistics Innovation Institute at Georgia Southern University need to look like, and how do we think through what's going to happen there? So we're in the middle of a big study. It was supposed to be done in May, but it'll come out around June 30th right now that Georgia Southern is leading. As I mentioned, we did a SCAD Pro program to leverage SCAD students as well for them to think through the future of logistics. We're going to kind of put the two together and, come summer, be able to go back to the city, go back to the state with some ideas of what we should be doing that we're not doing today to encourage logistics innovation.
That's a great initiative, and I love the way that you said, focus in on where you're where your strengths are. Someone described sort of the journey of an entrepreneur as it's a relay race, not just a single person. That, that mentor, that expertise of what it takes to get it out of the garage and your first round of angel capital is a little bit different than somebody that's going to take you through several rounds of VC, that's going to help you scale, that's going to help you look for that exit or do whatever. And so that whole community coming together and bringing all that expertise becomes absolutely critical.
It's been fun. I'm meeting a lot of new people. I'm not necessarily a logistics expert, so I'm learning a lot. It's been a lot of fun. The port is amazing. If any of y'all come down and want to go for a tour of the port, let me know. We'll make that happen. It's really interesting to see kind of the behind the scenes at the port. And then there's some really innovative work going on in some of the warehouses with robotics. I've seen robotic arms that have been designed such that they can pick up a piece of fruit, much like a human hand would, but not bruise it. How do you automate some of those quality processes? Yeah. And there's a lot of interesting, innovative things going on that most people don't know about.
Well, let's talk. So tell us a little bit more about what's going on in federal community and economic development in Savannah. And didn't you just announce a new incentive to attract more companies to Savannah?
I did. This is actually a little bit more about more talent to Savannah than companies. So yeah, so with my CETA hat on, we've been busy all through COVID-19. We're still getting requests for projects, companies that want to open here, either advanced manufacturers. For the most part, advanced manufacturers, right? The tech companies that I primarily work with are hunkered down, doing their thing, trying to make it through this pivot, not necessarily thinking about moving their operations right now. And so one of the things that I've been looking at is we have a tremendous amount of young talent in Savannah that really wants to stay in Savannah, right? There's 12,000 SCAD students that are essentially digital natives, right? Their number one skill that SCAD teaches is design thinking, which is a customer-centered problem-solving skills, which every company, you know, wants today. And it doesn't matter, like this last program, I was working with a young woman that's in the fibers program. Who would have thought, but you know, she came up with one of the best ideas for solving some of the logistics issues that we were talking about in the future of logistics program. And so, you know, Georgia Southern has a tremendously strong computer science department, which is primarily 45 minutes away, but they are teaching some of the economics and computer science classes here in Savannah as well. And as that university comes together under one umbrella with one leader, that's going to be a tremendous asset as well. Georgia Southern University is also a tier two research institute. That only happened about 4 years ago. So it's you know, really stepping up its research protocols right now and thinking about how does research play. And so how do I leverage this young talent and this commercialization of intellectual property that's going to come out of the university to grow companies, grow the economy, diversify the economy away from strict logistics companies to logistics innovation companies or to other types of software companies that are high wage jobs is really what I think about. And so we've had incentives since I got here. They were probably started about 4 years ago. Very creative, have been written up in a number of economic development magazines. They're called the Creative Technologies Incentives. And it, in the past, rewarded a company for moving here, helped with relocation of employees, helped with facilities, rentals, and with a grant on the back end based on the number of jobs you created. So if you created five tech jobs that paid 10% above average county wage, I could write a grant proposal to you for just write your check for $10,000 as part of a grant on the back end after you had those jobs in place for a year. So what I've done is I've tried to break those into three separate. They were kind of all looped together into one incentive. I'm breaking those into different incentives so that I can leverage them more effectively. So the relocation incentive is no longer tied to a company, right? So the relocation incentive goes to an individual that chooses Savannah, chooses to relocate to Savannah, that has at least 3 years tech experience, and they can either be moving here to take a job for one of the tech companies I work for, one of the larger companies here that just needs a tech worker, and or because they can work remote. So if they can work remote, I can reimburse your relocation incentives if you choose Savannah. Do you have to commit to being here for 2 years? It's up to $2,000, so it may not be all of your moving costs, but the intent is to hopefully reach out to people that it was their dream to end up in Savannah at some point in the future to incentivize them, if they're tech workers, to come now. Especially if you can work anywhere, choose Savannah.
There you go. Well, that's exciting. I think it's a great opportunity for people to move and take advantage of a great quality of life, a great lifestyle, a great quality of place. You know, when they can even have a background that they try to recreate technically on all of these digital platforms, you've got it right there. You've got the marshland, you've got the water. It's real. It's the real world. Again, it's where technology meets the real world, and you don't have to recreate it as a photograph. Jiminy, thank you so much for taking some time. Jiminy is the Vice President of Innovation and Entrepreneurship at the Savannah Economic Development Authority. I'm always delighted to have a nice conversation with you, Jen. And thank you for all that you're doing.
It's always good to catch up. Hopefully we'll be able to catch up in real life soon.
I'm looking forward to it. This is Larry Williams, President and CEO of TAG. We're pleased to have brought you another edition of our podcast featuring our technology community's best and brightest leaders. Thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to for you to tune in at the next one. So thank you so much.